Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson, and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 797 for release on Sunday, June 2nd, 2024. On WaveScan today, the Zenith story, part 4. And we'll have DX news from Japan and Bangladesh. If you're a regular listener, you'll know that we've been serializing the history of the Zenith Radio Corporation from its early beginnings before the First World War and have so far reached the mid-1930s. Today, Ray Robinson brings us the remainder of the story from the mid-30s to the mid-50s.
Suddenly, there's a whole new way of looking at radio. Introducing the Zenith Trendsetters. Everything from a wallet-style radio that plays open or closed to a self-charging table radio that converts into a portable. Even a digital circle of sound clock radio that surrounds you with sound. See all the new trendsetters from Zenith, where the quality goes in before the name goes on.
Throughout the 1920s and even through the Depression years of the early 1930s, Zenith Radio Corporation had been a very progressive and inventive company that always maintained the highest quality in its products. Their drive for innovation helped them weather the financial storm and indeed helped them recover much quicker than many of their competitors. A further innovation in 1935 was as simple and obvious as the eraser on a pencil, but it had been completely overlooked by the entire industry. Prior to 1935, the dials on all makes of radio receivers were small and difficult to read. Zenith changed all this by adding to its 1935 line a large black dial with figures so distinct that they were easily read, even without glasses, by most people. This dial became a tremendous sales feature and was widely copied by other manufacturers. Even during the emphasis on low-priced receivers in the Depression years, Zenith had not forgotten its devotion to quality. Consequently, it found a ready market for its 1935 line of feature-laden receivers. One model, selling at $750, incorporated Zenith's largest chassis in a massive cabinet, with 50-watt audio output, variable selectivity, three speakers, and other exceptional features. By 1937, Zenith had completely outgrown its Iron Street factory, so they purchased a large building at 6001 West Dickens Avenue, Chicago, with over 390,000 square feet of floor space and another 225,000 square feet of unoccupied land. The factory was completely renovated and equipped with the most modern production equipment available to make it one of the most efficient production units in the radio industry. That year, 1937, the radio industry as a whole showed a 15% drop in sales, but Zenith sales increased. New developments prior to American entry into World War II included a new radiogram, a baby room monitor, and a new line of portable radios. An outstanding feature of the new Zenith portables was the detachable wave magnet antenna that could be attached to the windows of planes, trains, or steel buildings to give good reception in these difficult locations. Headline star of the portable radio field was the transoceanic shortwave and longwave portable, which was put into mass production some months before the factory converted 100% to war production. This set had been several years in the making before it went into production and had been thoroughly field tested in every type of climate, from the Arctic to the tropics.
Introducing the uncommon radio for the uncommon man, Zenith's 11-band transoceanic, powered to tune in the world with 9 international shortwave, weather, and marine bands, plus standard AM and FM. At Zenith, the quality goes in before the name goes on.
When civilian production stopped, Zenith had unfilled orders on hand for more than 100,000 transoceanic portables. It was unable to fill these, but tens of thousands had already been produced and shipped. These sets were carried to every war theater by American soldiers and officials and earned a reputation for outstanding performance and rugged durability that was never approached by any other portable radio receiver. Demand for the transoceanic portable became enormous, and sets commanded fantastic prices on the black market because none was to be had through regular commercial channels. Zenith, of course, sold none, but the management had kept a small inventory. These sets were presented from time to time to American ambassadors and to other officials who had urgent need for them. It was a favorite saying around the plant that there were two things at Zenith money couldn't buy: Zenith friendship and transoceanic portables. Shortly after establishment of radio networks in 1926, Zenith concluded that there were enough broadcast programs on the air to satisfy public need, and accordingly disposed of station WJAZ. However, the development of television and FM in the late 1930s made it advisable, from an engineering standpoint, for the company to re-enter the broadcasting field. On February 2, 1939, Zenith went on the air with W9XZV, the nation's first all-electronic television station built to then-current standards. For nearly 3 years, this was the only television station operating in Chicago. The station operated three nights, Monday, Wednesday and Friday, from 7 until 10 p.m., and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday. One of the purposes of the noon programs was to project a picture which Zenith and other Chicago manufacturers could use to test their receiver designs. In those days, there was no other broadcast or test signal which could be used to determine whether a receiver would work when installed or repaired. Programs included both motion pictures and live productions. Many prominent entertainers of that era appeared on the station. During the war, at the request of the FCC, W9XZV broadcast the world premiere of the motion picture Patrolling the Ether, an MGM production. Post-war, the station continued to operate from the factory location until it was moved to the Field Building in 1950. There, under new call letters, K2XBS, it became invaluable to the television industry during development of the NTSC system of color television. In the late 1930s, Major E.H. Armstrong perfected his static and interference-free system of FM broadcasting to the point where the FCC set aside certain channels for its development. On February 2, 1940, Zenith's FM station, W9XEN, went on the air from studios in the factory. It was the first FM station in the Midwest, and the second or third in the country. The transmitter was moved to a location on top of the Field Building in Chicago's Loop on February 27, 1941. It was assigned the new call letters of WEFM, and its power was increased to 50 kilowatts, making it the most powerful FM transmitter in the country. Programming was confined to music, predominantly symphonic in nature, but with semi-classical segments arranged to meet the desires of particular listener groups. In 1953, WEFM was the first station in the Chicago area to broadcast a high-fidelity signal spanning the range between 20 and 20,000 hertz. During the war, Zenith developed many shortcuts in the production of war material. Zenith's war production ranged from radar to communications equipment. Early in the war, Zenith was asked to mass-produce a frequency meter that had been developed as a hand-built instrument of fantastic accuracy and sensitivity. Its purpose was to ensure identical, matching frequencies on the radio equipment of, for example, all the bombers that went on a particular raid. Because it would be used all over the world, it had to maintain its accuracy anywhere from the frigid Arctic to blistering deserts and sweltering tropical jungles. As the peak period of war production passed in 1944, Zenith was looking toward the post-war development of television. Engineers realized there could never be sufficient VHF channels for national television operation, so all design work was based on the supposition that UHF reception must be available for all receivers. In connection with this design work, Zenith engineers felt that it was essential to have a UHF transmitter in addition to the VHF transmitter on channel 2. In 1944, Zenith applied for an experimental UHF transmitter license, which was granted in 1945. All transmitter and other equipment for this station was built in the Zenith Laboratory and went on the air at the main plant in June 1946, operating under the call letters KS2XBR. Pre-war Zenith was one of the few radio manufacturers that had mastered the technical intricacies of FM receivers. During the war, it was decided that post-war, the frequency for FM stations should be changed from the 45 MHz band to the 100 MHz band. This move posed new problems for receiver manufacturers by requiring completely new circuit designs. In 1948, Zenith put its first line of television receivers on the market. With an eye to protecting its customers' investment in Zenith television sets, the company introduced an advanced type turret tuner which could be utilized for future UHF reception by the simple addition of tuning strips. The first organized work of Zenith engineers on color television started in 1940, at which time all necessary VHF transmitter, receiver and studio equipment, including direct pickup cameras, were constructed in the Zenith laboratories. Experimental work continued with this equipment until all experimentation ceased because of the war. The first color broadcasts in Chicago were transmitted over Zenith's VHF station in 1940 and 1941. In November 1945, experimental work was resumed on the pre-war color equipment, and color broadcasting was resumed in 1946 on the new UHF transmitter equipment built in the Zenith laboratories. In the fall of 1950, Zenith was transmitting the NTSC-type color signals. By then it had become apparent that the CBS field sequential system was not practical, and Zenith's entire efforts were thereafter devoted to the multiplex system, which was ultimately adopted by the NTSC and the Federal Communications Commission. By 1951, Zenith had established a regular schedule calling for color transmission 1 hour each day, Monday, Wednesday and Friday, over both its VHF and UHF stations. This schedule continued with only minor interruptions until 1953. And finally, as the year 1953 neared its close, the Federal Communications Commission gave its approval to the NTSC system of color television, thanks largely to the experimentation and engineering efforts of the Zenith Radio Corporation. This series of segments on the Zenith story has been mostly based on a brochure produced by the company in 1955, and this is as far as it went with regard to their broadcasting activities. Our thanks once again to listener Vince Kopke for bringing this brochure to our attention.
Well, there are many people of prominence who have been thrilled to receive this. Zenith's famous 9-band transoceanic, the world's most exciting radio. Powered to tune in the world. You'll find every Zenith radio from the famous transoceanic to the tiniest pocket transistor is built in the Zenith quality tradition, including super-sensitive FM-AM radios, Ansem table and clock radios, and powerful solid-state portables. Over 100 radios to choose from, priced to fit every gift budget. At Zenith, the quality goes in before the name goes on. If you're buying a radio for a king, a friend, or for yourself, why not get the best?
Thank you, Ray Robinson, for that report on the Zenith Corporation. Next week, Ray will bring us the second and final part of a series we started last year on the topic of broadcasting in Iceland. Last week, we mentioned that Radio France International was giving extensive coverage of the civil unrest in the French South Pacific Islands of New Caledonia. Well, the protests have continued there by indigenous Kanak Islanders who are not happy with the French decision to grant voting rights to more recent French immigrants to New Caledonia, thus diluting the percentage of eligible Kanak voters in local elections. Even French President Emmanuel Macron made a visit to the territory in recent days, and hundreds of French troops were also sent there to try to quell the violence. If you want to follow coverage of this situation in English, both Radio New Zealand Pacific and ABC Radio Australia have had many reports as well. Here's a clip from a recent edition of the Pacific Wave program from RNZ Pacific.
Salo for lover, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Swiecki, coming up.
We are ready for dialogue. We are ready to find a solution.
The French ambassador to the Pacific makes a plea for dialogue. The French ambassador to the Pacific has condemned violence in New Caledonia, calling it an unacceptable means to an end.
Radio Australia's Pacific Beat program has been covering the New Caledonia crisis a lot as well. Of course, they aren't on shortwave anymore, but you can hear their web stream and on-demand programs on their website. And various local radio stations throughout the Pacific transmit Radio Australia programs, as you can hear in this excerpt from a recent edition of Pacific Beat.
Nōia e Māori, kia ora nā and good morning. You're tuning in to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia, where we always like to acknowledge that we bring our show to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. I do want to say a big gasalelia and hello and menswang mal to our new listeners in Pohnpei in the Federated States of Micronesia. Yes, you're tuning in via 89.1 FM, where you'll hear our show to bring you the latest news and views from across the Pacific, and some good music too. Now, when looking for our stories, type Pacific Beat Radio Australia into your search engine, and you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram via ABC. Well, will French President Emmanuel Macron's arrival in New Caledonia be welcomed by the Indigenous Kanak leaders? Pacific seasonal labourers here in Australia facing housing problems. More on these stories shortly. And if it's your first time tuning in, I'm your host, Agi Dubol. I say whaftai te le lava. Thank you for tuning into Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific.
Radio Australia's Pacific Beat there. Now DX News from Bangladesh and Japan.
Dear listeners and radio hobbyists, welcome you in May 2024 edition of Bangladesh DX Report in WaveScan. This is Salahuddin Dollar from Rajshahi, Bangladesh. Glad to be back and thanks for listening. Now the receiving log of different radio stations. April 4th, Tajin Radio Naipido, while talking in Burmese, was heard at 1142 UTC on 7345 kHz. The SIO code was 322. April 8, Trans World Radio Hindi Service religious program Aapke Liye was heard at 1320 UTC on 17700 kHz. The SIO code was 444. 11th April, NHK World Radio Japanese Service discussion between OM and Wile was heard at 0220 UTC on 15245 kHz. The SIO code was 433. Radio Free Asia, Burmese Service, OM and Wile's discussion was heard at 0222 UTC on 15245 kHz. The SIO code was 444. All India Radio External Service in Indonesian playing Hindi folk song was heard at 0225 UTC on 15260 kHz. The SIO code was 444. Adventist World Radio Dushanbe English Service gospel program was heard at 0231 UTC on 15515 kHz. The SIO code was 444. Adventist World Radio Trincomalee Christian Religious Talk by OM in Dari was heard at 0233 UTC on 15445 kHz. The SIO code was 544. World Christian Broadcasting KNLS English program OM talking about Christian religious music was heard at 0245 UTC on 13760 kHz. The SIO code was 454. Voice of America Diwa Radio Udanthai Pashto Service song was heard at 0248 UTC on 13750 kHz. The SIO code was 555. Radio Taiwan International English Service discussion between discussion about typhoon and cyclone between OM and YL was heard at 1632 UTC on 9405 kHz. The SIO code was 444. 12th April, Myanmar radio Yangon Burmese talk by OM was heard at 1338 UTC on 5985 kHz. The SIO code was 444. BBC Al Dhabba Burmese reporting by OM was heard at 1357 UTC on 17515 kHz. The SIO code was 444. Voice of America Tibetan Service while talking was heard at 1442 UTC on 17690 kHz. The SIO code was 333. Voice of Turkey Arabic Service whilst talking was heard at 1445 UTC on 17770 kHz. The SIO code was 444. We want to thank Mr. Pradeep Chandra Kundu from Tripura, India for sharing his log with us. If you have any comments and suggestion, and send your reception report to the following email address dxbangla@gmail.com. The address again dxbangla@gmail.com. Okay, I will come with more DX news in the next edition. Till then, take care. Salauddin Dollar, Rajshahi, Bangladesh.
Welcome to the DX Report of the Month from Japan Shortwave Club, edited by Toshio Take and I'm Yukiko Tsuji. We have several DX reports from our club members this week. Radio Vanuatu was heard on 7260 kHz on April 29th from 0820 to 0850 UTC in Wislama. SIO rating was 252, then up to 332. Interview program was aired. ID was given at 0830, then telephone interview followed after that. Interference was jamming at 0849. Radio Fada via Udontani, Thailand was heard on 17690 kHz on May 11th from 0834 to the sign-off at 0930 UTC in Persian. SIO rating was 353. Talk program by male and female announcers and local song were broadcast. ID was given at 0926. Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation was received on 11750 kHz on April 27th from the sign-on at 1629 to 1700 UTC in Sinhala. SIO rating was 352. Talk program and local pop music were on the air. ID was given at the City FM at 1632 and 1648. Voice of Tajik from Dushanbe was heard on 7245 kHz on May 2nd from 1725 to 1735 UTC in Farsi. SIO rating was 343. Music program was broadcast. Radio Kuwait was received on 15540 kHz on April 27th from the sign-on at 1601 to the sign-off at 1700 UTC in Udu. SIO rating was 353. News in brief was aired until 1602, then Quran recitation started. Talk program by male and female announcers was broadcast at 1607, followed by English message at 1622. Time signal and news were heard at 1700, but it soon signed off. On May 9th, this station signed on at 1617 in Urdu, and its SIO rating was 352. Voice of Turkey was heard on 17620 kHz on May 2nd from 1058 with interval signal to 1125 UTC in Chinese. SIO rating was 352. ID was given at 1100, then news was broadcast. Commentary started at 1109, followed by Turkish song at 1117.
World Christian Broadcasting from Madagascar was heard on 13670 kHz on May 4th from 1800 to 1900 UTC in English. SIO rating was 352, then up to 353. African Pathways Radio was aired. ID was given at 1800, then Bible study started. VOA via San Tome e Principe was received on 11625 kHz on May 7th, from the sign-on at 2100 to the sign-off at 2130 UTC in French. SIO rating was 343. Talk program with interview was broadcast. ID in English and the interval signal were heard at 2129. Radio Nacional de Amazonia via Brasilia, Brazil was heard on 6180 kHz on April 29th from 0853 to 0905 UTC in Portuguese. SIO rating was 352. Sertanejo and the talk program were aired until 0900, then ID and the pop music were on the air. Finally, Japan Shortwave Club will issue the QSL cards for the correct reports on our segment of WaveScan program. We are issuing QSL card by email to the report sent by email. Our address for your email report is jswcqsl@live.jp. I repeat, jswcqsl@live.jp. We continue to issue the printed QSL card by the same system as before. Your report should be addressed to JSWC PO Box 44 Kamakura, which is KAMAKURA, postal code 248-8691, Japan. One IOC or $2 for return postage will be appreciated. For this edition of DX Report, we would like to thank Mr. Yoshiaki Hayashi, Mr. Seiichi Hosono, Mr. Iwao Nagatani, Mr. Chiaki Shimada, and Mr. Kazuaki Oikawa for sharing the information with us. Thank you for listening, and please join us for our next edition of DX Report of Japan Shortwave Club.
Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week on WaveScan, Iceland Part 2 and our Philippine DX report. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.